This episode of Shutters Inc. is brought to you by Hedge for Mac, your best resource for data backup on OS X. It's the fastest, safest backup routine for your video, photo, and audio assets with full bit-perfect copy and verification. Go to hedgeformac.com/shuttersinc for more info and to obtain a 20% discount exclusively for Shutters Inc. listeners.
This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 344 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuttersincpodcast.com, and joining me from Melbourne once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hi, this is Glyn from Creative Photo Workshops. Welcome to shuttersincpodcast.com, whatever it is. Oh, I thought I'd do the opening myself this time around.
And fail miserably.
I haven't quite got a damn... quite podcasty thing.
You're practicing in front of the mirror,
344, mate. episode 344.
That's it.
Which means if you calculate 45 minutes per episode, you've lost about 300 hours of your life.
Yeah.
When you put it like that, now what are you doing 300 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think about it, put it all together.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's like 15 days.
15 days all day, all night. Jeez. On the go.
Oh, couldn't think of anything worse.
Senseless waste of human life.
That's right.
There's half a month you'll never get back, people.
That's it.
You're only on this planet once, you know.
That's right.
Well, depending on your belief structure, but you know.
So, how has your week been?
Well, it's been short because we didn't record that long ago.
Okay.
No, it's good. I did the club talk the other night.
Oh, yeah? How'd that go?
Yeah, you know, as I said to them, I'm the best speaker you've had since your last speaker.
Nice.
I did put in a few new lines to my opening, though, which I went down quite well. Yeah, it's been featured in such prestigious publications as Is Mum's Blog, the Kitty Poster, Lost Kitty Poster down at the post office. Yeah, and his Facebook wall.
Right.
So yeah, the prestigious. I've been published in some very prestigious places.
You should have made up some fictitious newspaper like the Unadatta Herald or something.
Yeah, because that could sound good though. So
well, that's true. Bad. For those that don't know Unadatta.
But it just sounds good, you know. But it's like, the feature on the Lost Kitty poster. I thought was a stroke of brilliance. Personally,
should have on the back of a milk carton.
That's too good. That's too good a press as well, because that's thousands of copies.
Oh,
yeah,
that's true. That's
Lost Kitty. You might get on the telegraph pole and down the local milk bar or post office or something. You know, that's kind of all you're getting. You're getting 2-3 copies max.
Yeah, right. Yeah?
And it's a cheap photocopy from somewhere, so the quality of the picture's not looking too good.
But other than that, the evening went well.
The evening went well. Yes, it was a fun night. But here's a weird thing though. Yeah. Average age. Mm. For the group, there's about 40 people there, 20 years younger than the average for camera clubs I normally speak at.
Wow.
So they're all in the 70s. No, no, it was quite a youngish, let's say 45 to 50-ish age group. There's a lot of people in that sort of zone and quite a few younger, which is,
Was this club a subset of some larger organisation like an RSL club or a... Or something like that, or was it a
own freestanding little organisation?
Yeah, right. Nice.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you ask the organisers how they managed to get a younger clientele?
No, the battery in the hearing aid wasn't working properly.
All right. Okay. Dear.
I asked, but that's it. It's 6:45. And I said, no. How do you get to these young people? It's 6:45. Yeah, okay. But my kids came along.
Right.
Came along because I couldn't get a babysitter.
Oh, okay.
My wife was interstate or something. And so they tried to ask questions all the way through the presentation. They're going, why did you do that one in black and white? Actually, pretty good questions. Like, why did you do that one in black and white? Why does she look so sad? Yeah, that sort of stuff. It's kind of off-putting. It's fun.
Cool.
You had a good week yourself? Did anything exciting?
Mate, I have been so busy at work because my offsider, the other commercial producer, he's on holiday for 2 weeks, and they don't replace either of us when we take leave. So it's just,
now you're doing almost a real day's work.
That's
now,
right.
It's two halves.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's just been manic the last week and a half. So he's back next Monday, so.
Dump it all on him for a day or two.
That's right.
So, look, yeah, I'm stepping out for a coffee. I'll be back Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple.
So, anyway, so what do you got on your list?
Well, it's going to be a short episode tonight because I've got not a great deal and you've got even less.
Yeah, that's right.
But before we go on to our stuff, let's and our young man Carl sent this through as well. Yeah. Let's talk about back to our high ISO.
Right.
How'd you go during the week?
Well, I did an experiment on Saturday night as I was writing up the show notes for episode 343.
Yeah.
And I shot three raw images.
You went crazy. You took three photos.
I went crazy. 3,200 ISO, 800 ISO and 200 ISO, I think it was, from memory. And my results were far different from Carl's results.
Interesting, isn't it?
It is very interesting. Mine were all shot in raw and 36 megs plus or minus around about 50 kilobytes. There really wasn't much difference at all.
But there was a variation.
Sorry?
But there was a variation.
But there was a variation, but certainly nowhere near the 44% as quoted in the blog post.
But also, yeah, but hang on a sec. We've got to look at, I've been thinking about this during the week.
Yeah.
Generations of cameras.
Yes.
The problem is your camera, the difference between your camera at 200 ISO and 3200, it's not that much noise extra. It's not like, oh my God, this horrendous, unusable image now because of all the noise.
It's pretty close to it.
No.
Yeah.
You've got the 900, haven't you?
No, the 850.
That, which is even
newer. It's the same sensor as the 900.
Well, I've shot the 900 at 6400 ISO and amazed
it. Appalling.
It was amazingly good.
What?
Amazing. You must have got a dodgy 850.
Maybe in daylight, but you shoot anything low light and it's horrid.
But were you shooting daylight or low light?
I was shooting low light. I was just here in my office under, incandescent lighting.
Okay, so how bad are the photos at 3200? Really noisy?
Off of noise? Oh, they're average.
Yeah, but is the average good, average bad? Were they, oh my God, that's horrendous? Because I'm figuring the more noise,
look,
the bigger
the pipe.
Look, I wasn't
trying to shoot anything brilliant. I just set my camera on the table beside me.
I'm not looking for brilliance, I'm looking for bad.
Yeah.
How high an ISO does your camera go to?
6,400.
Yes, that's bugger all.
So it was only one stop down from its highest ISO.
So I still would have pushed. So I'm the kind of guy who does the maximum of everything, dude.
Right.
So you're playing it safe at your 32, and you should have tried 64.
Okay.
And I want to see a difference between 100 ISO and a camera that does 128,000 ISO.
Right.
Well, when you have 456,000.
Well, here's the thing.
Some extreme difference.
I went, after we had recorded last week, I went and read the actual blog post that, we were referencing.
Done more than I
for
have.
That story. And what I did notice was the comment, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it right in front of me, but said, most cameras shoot some kind of compressed RAW format.
Yeah.
And that immediately jumped out at me as, okay, the minute you start talking compression, that's where you're going to start seeing massive differences in file size.
Yeah.
Because of, the way compression works. When it sees large, portions of the image which have a consistent tone, then it's going to compress that stuff a lot smaller than where there are greater, variances between pixels and, more detail to be captured. So if the original blog post was written, referencing the idea of compressed RAW, then yes, I can absolutely understand why there would be a difference. But the notion of shooting uncompressed RAW, I am absolutely gobsmacked that there's any difference at all between...
There you go.
Well, have you got an answer for why?
No.
How good are you?
Like I even care?
Of course you don't. You don't shoot it RAW.
Even if I did, I wouldn't care.
Inquiring minds need to know, Glenn.
It is interesting stuff, I must say. There is a certain degree of curiosity.
Like the notion of RAW says, we're capturing all the RAW data. It's not even an image. It's just RAW data. And that, the idea is that every one of those photo sites on the sensor is measuring the quantity of photons that are hitting it and converting that number into a string of binary data and sending that off to the image processor to say, hey, store this in pigeonhole 1.1 and, you know, and then here comes the data for 1.2 and store all these, you know, 48 million pixels or however many pixels are on the sensor. And that quantity of data is fixed. The values might change between each pixel, but the number of pixels is fixed. And so for uncompressed RAW, my analytical brain says that every file size should be identical. I want to know.
Well, you better ask some proper questions then.
I will. I'll have to find someone who can explain why this happens.
You need a bigger nerd than you.
I do.
Is this possible?
I do.
There's surely one out there in the interweb.
Yeah, there's bound to be someone somewhere who can explain.
There'll be one. But they wouldn't listen to how they know. You know?
No, there you go.
But it is a curiosity of digital world.
Definitely.
Yeah. So it was kind of a cool little piece we found. I'm trying to make you sound good, that I found last week.
Yeah. No, it's certainly piqued.
And good on you,
Carl,
for getting out there and doing. But yeah. I'd like someone to go out and do a shot with, like, you know, 128,000 ISO.
Yeah, you know, right.
Really go nutso. Give me 100 ISO and the biggest goddamn thing you can go to, you know.
Well, I do know one person who owns an A7S, and I know that that's capable of shooting at. Can't remember what its maximum ISO is. It's either 128,000 or it's 256,000. It's one or the other.
Yeah, it's big.
So I shall reach out to him and say, hey, can you shoot me a raw image at this and a raw image at that of the same subject and tell me what the file size is?
In really crappy light. In fact, any light doesn't really matter.
Well, that's the thing. The image that's being captured, or the data that's being captured, should have no bearing whatsoever on the file size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's fun stuff.
Absolutely.
So anyway.
So how's your planning for the US going? Non-existent.
You know, got to find me a hotel and transportation, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm pretty much where I was last episode. Done nothing.
Right.
Done nothing.
And you've still got 9 days before you go, so that gives you at least 8 days to kick back. 8 and a half.
I'm sure if you're driving down the road, you can see a hotel or something and pull over if needed.
Exactly.
But surely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get close and see what they've got. Yeah.
Yeah.
Play it by ear. Have a bit of adventure in your life.
That's
right. So I've been liaising with the local Tamron folk just to coordinate some stuff, and that's really about the
local meaning Los Angeles.
Local being Northern California.
Right.
Yeah.
And, so San Francisco.
Northern California.
Right. Further north. Okay.
Well, that's what they call me. So he says I'm the Northern California rep.
So right.
Yeah. Right. Go with what they say, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's about all I've done really is chatted with him and say I need these lenses, so I don't have to carry anything.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
If you're going to be lazy, be really lazy.
That's right.
Because there's always this trick of when you're traveling into countries, if you carry too much gear, you arouse all sorts of unnecessary, you know, questioning from customs officials and so on. And
yep.
In fact, a friend of mine had this horrible experience last a week or two ago in England, flying to England.
Right.
And
from Australia.
Yep. So she was interrogated at customs for like half an hour.
Right.
Asking all sorts of questions like, where are your children? Yeah. Where's your husband? What does your husband do for a living? Who does he work for? And just on and on and on. What do you take photos of?
Right.
What kind of babies? How old are the babies? And just like a million questions going on. And the woman's starting to get a bit panicky. She's going, it's just really unusual, strange behavior from this customs woman.
Yeah, right.
And it's just going on and on and on and on. So she's starting to have a little bit of a panic attack. I couldn't hear her voice anymore. I could see her mouth moving, but I couldn't even hear. That's how much of a panic attack I was going into.
Yeah, right.
And then 25, 30 minutes in, this other customs guy walks past and goes, oh, from Australia, how about the cricket? just completely, which threw it even more because it was so out of left. Yeah, and then the woman goes, look, yeah, I just want to point out there's a problem with your passport. She goes, what? She goes, well, she'd been there roughly a year earlier. She goes, well, yeah, and they're getting this question like, why were you only, where were you on these dates? What, where were you going to? She goes, I was going to the Greek Islands. And where did you stay? And all this was just a million questions about that. Wow. And then it comes down to, she goes, why were you only here for one day in England?
What?
She goes, well, I had to get from Heathrow to Gatwick to fly to Greece.
Yeah.
Because it's flying out of Gatwick. So I landed, drove up to there, got another plane, flew out. She goes, oh, that explains it. She goes, it explains what? She goes, oh, there's a notation in your passport last time, and it looks like a W. And that's really bad. If someone puts a W in your passport,
what?
You're in deep trouble. you've been put under serious suspicion. But it turns out the guy just wrote badly, and it actually should have been IT for in transit. Oh, but he wrote it, but it looked like a W.
What?
So we just questioned you for half an hour. Oh. It looked like a W. So the worst thing is, well, you're in the system now, and your passport's stamped like that, and we can't change it. So anytime you come into England now, you'll be under suspicion.
Whoa. That's insane.
Happy, joy there.
Jeez.
Unbelievable. All that because the guy couldn't write an IT properly. You know?
Wow.
So you just don't want to get, even if you're doing nothing out of the ordinary,
you don't want to get
the wrong side of those people because they got so much power, you know.
Yeah.
So not having to carry a whole bunch of gear and explain all that away is a good thing. I was having Mr. Tamron on board, loaning gear.
Yeah.
So I've done not a great deal of organising for the trip. I've got a one-on-one tomorrow, so I've been doing a little bit of planning. He's flying into the airport and picking up the airport, trying to find some good locations to shoot near the airport.
Don't lie.
What?
You didn't do any planning.
I did. I looked at Google Map and did Street View.
Right.
Well, okay. I'm doing it now.
Right. while we're recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Told. Yeah, doing it now.
That I can believe.
But it's still research.
Yeah.
I did pull out my gear early this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So I'm ahead of the ball.
What about your camera?
Boom,
boom.
So I've got a shoot, to a one-on-one shoot tomorrow with a new model, which I've never used, which is always fraught with danger.
Mm-hmm.
The only advantage is I'm going to her house to pick her up.
Right.
It's kind of hard for them to not show up if you're picking them up at the house.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a good chance she'll show up, and you just knock on the door, there's no one there.
I was going to say, you get there and find a note on the door, gone to the shops, back in five, and then she'll just never come back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Waiting. Oh dear! But I've been hard at work looking for three or four things to talk about tonight.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to get onto it because
excellent.
Yeah. Nothing else to say. There's a phone company called Oppos.
Oppos. Oppo.
Oppo. What's the S?
The S is meant to have an apostrophe before it.
Well, okay. They've come out with a new phone called the Selfie Expert.
Right.
And I thought this was worth mentioning because it's a new trend. It's something new that someone's finally bitten the bullet and putting the better camera on the front of the camera of the phone rather than the back of the phone.
Okay.
So now when you're trying to take your selfies, the best lens and best camera on the phone is the one that's pointing at you for your selfies.
Right.
Not the back of the phone when you're actually using it to take photos.
Right.
So we're finally hit the tipping point where phones are no longer for taking photos of stuff. It's just
just to take a photo of yourself.
So we're now going to make the best possible photos that get from selfies because our lens is better than anybody else.
Right.
Camera's better.
So now, it's Oppo that we were talking about only a month ago who had licensed the Leica name.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, that was Oppo.
Really?
But I don't think it was for this phone. I don't think it was this phone.
It was Huha who had done the Leica.
Huawei?
This one.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My apologies. I stand corrected. Yeah, I think you might be right, actually. I think it was Huawei.
Wait. Just. Can you just put that on a loop, like 10 seconds? Maybe with a nice little disco beat behind it.
Right. I'll see what I can do for you.
Lovely. And I'm telling you what, people who actually listen to this podcast will report if you don't. They were put on the Facebook. Bruce didn't do the You Are Right loop with disco music for 10 seconds.
Yeah. There you go. Right.
I expect the regulars to be all over that.
Yeah, so I'm sure they will.
It's a challenge right now.
I stand corrected. Think you might be right. I stand corrected. Think you might be right. I stand corrected. Think you might be right. I stand corrected.
Okay. So, yeah, so I think it was Hoo-Ha.
Huawei, yes.
Now, last week we were talking about Plotograph. Remember that?
Yes.
The very expensive $300 software package to make photos.
Make animated GIFs out of stills. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some guy liked it, but didn't want to spend the $300, so he's made a Photoshop action.
Nice. To do
fairly similar. It doesn't look as good, but right. Fairly similar. So I thought for those who are interested and might ever play around, yeah. I'll put the link in there.
Okay.
For the Plotograph Photoshop action.
And it's free.
Well, kind of. He does want a donation. So
£1. So it's donationware.
Yeah. So it starts at minimum price is like £1, I think.
Okay.
Which, of course, why I didn't spend that much money myself. But then I came across, I was reading an interesting thing about Getty because the Olympics are on at the moment.
For those
listening in the future, it's the Olympics in 2016 right now.
Yeah.
I hope the future has been good to us all and we're still here.
Kath came into my office on Saturday night. She said, "Oh, I've got to show you this while it's still here." She shows me a phone that was the tally with Australia as the leading gold.
Top of the it was there. It was there for one day. But here's the thing: America are going to hit their 1,000th gold medal this Olympics.
Wow,
which sounds impressive.
Yeah,
but Australia's got like 125.
Wow.
And we're less than one-tenth of their population.
Right. So per capita, so we're whipping them.
But 10 times of our population, keep the same growth, we're 1,250 gold.
Nice.
We passed the 1,000 several Olympics ago.
Nice.
Theory. So, and I guarantee you right now, they're spending a hell of a lot more money on it than we do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, our mob, they put together like a tea cosy with some scones and some jam and cream, and that's about the entire – and they're going to sell those on a Saturday morning to raise money for the Olympics.
I guess the question is, are they spending 10 times what we're spending? That's the big question.
I imagine they're spending probably a lot more than that.
Yeah, probably.
So that was it. But I was looking at this article on how Getty are processing the images.
Oh, okay.
You know, so how it's being shot, all the preparation time, they've been preparing for 7 years for this event.
Yeah, right.
Okay, which is kind of mad because there's been an Olympics 4 years ago. So, I mean, but anyway, they're planning before.
Interestingly, 7 years is the lead time from the announcement of any given city to when the games are hosted in that city.
There you go. That might be why.
Yeah.
So if a photographer takes an image,
mm-hmm.
Okay, it's streamed to the control booth, culled.
So wirelessly from the camera?
No, all by cable.
Oh, okay.
So it's all what's that, like modem-y cable?
Tethered.
No, but what
Ethernet.
That's it, the Ethernet cable. So all around every venue at key points,
yep.
There's Ethernet cables that the photographers come and plug their camera straight into.
Right.
Okay. So it becomes part of a network. But from the moment the photograph's taken, sent through automatically, fired to the control center, culled by an editor, sent to a guy who's going to crop and contrast brightness, yep. Sent off to a support editor to make the final decision, and then put up on the Getty website.
Yep.
When in a perfect world, when everything's going fine, 2 minutes. 120 seconds.
Wow.
And they're getting 10 images a second.
Oh, what?
10 images a second coming through. And it's, of course, they're not selecting all 10. They're,
I was going to say.
But they're culling out of that 10 to get the key images, the best images, obviously.
Whoa.
But when everything's going well, under 2 minutes.
Wow.
Which is quite astounding, isn't it?
If you're
linked into the Getty system and you're for your own name, news websites or whatever, you have access within 2 minutes to the images for you. And the API automatically puts it on your website and you can then go. You know? So it's quite a remarkable system.
That's intense. Very intense.
Amazing. Amazing. And they're saying they're expecting, I think, to shoot something like, I can't remember what it was. It was like 1.5 million images or something.
Wow.
Over these Olympics.
Yeah.
Of which 85,000 will be used.
Wow.
Yeah, which in itself was quite a hell of a lot of photos.
That's crazy.
But yeah, what an amazing system. Yeah.
Yeah.
120 seconds to be out in the world, finished. Yeah, and we're talking that it's all been tagged with
metadata. Yep.
All, yeah, but also which athletes, yep. which event, all the timings of the event, all the stuff that's relevant to the story of the yep. photo is yep. all embedded inside that 2 minutes as well.
Wow.
Remarkable feat.
I would hope that there is some sort of system in place so that the moment a photographer plugs his camera in, you know, plugs the Ethernet cable into his camera, hopefully the system would go, okay, that's camera serial number, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That's assigned to photographer X, who's currently covering event Y. And hopefully it would automatically fill a lot of that metadata in as it's ingesting those images across the network.
Yeah, it has.
You know, like how Lightroom has an import preset?
They have their own. So said most of the editing, like the contrast, the color,
yep.
the cropping, is all done in Photoshop.
In Photoshop.
But
what?
So contrast, color, cropping, Photoshop.
Man.
However, proprietary software owned by Getty tags the images with some metadata, such as camera and exposure specs, dates, locations. And anything that's recorded by the camera, basically.
I was going to say, most of that stuff's captured in camera.
Exactly. And then our software stamps each image with the data as it's ingested into the network.
Wow.
So, quite remarkable. And then the final stage is to add specific data, such as the names of the athletes, the details of the photos.
Yeah.
This is applied by a third editor who's also responsible for routing the picture to the relevant section of the Getty Images website.
Wow.
And the proper transmission channels.
Talk about a pressure gig. Like, if you're any one of those three editors, you know, the guy selecting, you know, the key images, the guy who's doing the basic crop and color, and like, man, that's a pressure gig.
Absolutely. So they've got a crew of, I think it's 110.
Wow.
Working it, and 18 editors.
Yeah.
Right. But here's the thing that they're saying this is and one of the reasons I brought this up. A lot of the photographers in the major sports photographers that were out there shooting these Olympic Games used to be editors for Getty at sporting events.
Wow.
They say there's no better proving ground and training ground to learn what to shoot and how to shoot and when to shoot than to have to edit somebody else's photos in this sort of pressure cooker.
Yeah, right.
And so there it goes. If you're an aspiring wannabe hang on a sec, I was going to throw a box of tissues at a cat. Hang on a sec. Get it. Oh, shot. Right on the head. so if I walked in the bathroom today and found it chewing on my daughter's toothbrush.
Oh, bad kitty.
I just washed the toothbrush.
Yeah.
That one, they won't know, won't kill them. so they're saying, so if you're an aspiring wannabe sports photographer,
yeah,
maybe the pathway to that is not go out and take photos, but learn to be a great bloody sports editor. Photo editor first and try and get in the back door that way.
But do people end up in editor gigs without having shot first?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I mean, even if you are shooting,
yep.
there's a million people out there who want to shoot the Olympics.
Oh, for sure.
What's the chance of getting in there if there's a million people? Now, how many people want to do the editing gig?
Yeah, probably not that many.
Yeah, ratio-wise, hell of a lot less.
Yeah.
You know? So, but once you're in... Once you're in the system, maybe there's a way out to do what your goal is.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'd be a whole lot better photographer if I'm learning from all these great photographers that they're using.
Yeah, right.
So I just thought it was a really, really interesting sort of backdoor way of getting in for anyone who's got that kind of desire.
Yeah.
To be a sports photographer. Yeah. You know? You could take great sports photos, but yeah, so does everyone who does that job. You
yeah,
know
yeah.
What makes you stand out? Well, yeah, if it's like years ago when McDonald's used to be good at staff training, and if you wanted to employ someone and they'd been through McDonald's as a kid working,
yep.
you'd almost always employ them.
A lot of people still feel that way.
Yeah, but except McDonald's don't train the staff. That ever been to McDonald's lately? Their staffing is atrocious.
Max is working there now.
If you were trained in like, if you worked in the McDonald's in the '80s and nineties, yeah, you'd probably employ them. But if they worked in McDonald's last year, you wouldn't go anywhere near them, probably.
Right.
Yeah. But back in all those old days of would you like fries with that?
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. You know, the sales training and the skill levels that these guys were trained to was so good.
Right.
So it's the same kind of philosophy. You know, if you go and be a fantastic editor, you go through that proving ground first,
yeah,
and then there's a doorway into becoming a fabulous sports photographer, but a very different way. So as I said, many of our photographers actually began their careers as editors. Editing other people's work, especially very talented people, is a very good apprenticeship to becoming a sports photographer full time.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a key point. Not a way I'd ever thought about it before. You know,
yeah.
I guess it's like you're going to do an apprentice for a lot of jobs. Yeah, it's in some ways you can't really go an apprentice photographing the event and in that sort of pressure cooker environment.
No.
But you could look at the end result of the shots that the people are doing.
Yeah.
The thing is, the
Olympics is kind of like the top tier for that type of work. And, you know, to even be considered, you would have had to have worked your way up through everything from, you know, starting off shooting your son's soccer match to then shooting club level cricket to, you know, then maybe shooting, you know, your capital city's football team kind of thing. And you would have to work your way up through successive layers of competition. You know,
and you've got to know people.
Absolutely. It's all about networking, for sure.
Whereas if you're just really good at Photoshop editing, and you're really fast.
Yeah.
Bang,
so what?
Well, maybe there's an in there, because all the people working the Olympics have all come from other events during the year that Getty shoot.
Yeah.
So everyone who's there, so they work for Getty all the time. They're doing all these images and all normal sporting events throughout the years.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the big gigs, you've proven yourself capable of doing it, you know?
Yeah, sorry. When I said so what, I thought we were still on the idea of networking, meaning that, you know, you can be a great editor, but if you don't have the network connections, then you can still miss out on the gig. Because I'm sure there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of really experienced people who could probably do that gig of, you know, the culling and the editing of that high pressure flow of turnover, who just don't have the connections and therefore would never get a Guernsey.
Or never thought to do it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, if it's not a normal pathway to, and once again, if that's most of those people who are competent doing that, maybe don't want to be photographers.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. So, but if your goal is to be a photographer, well, how do you get in if you don't know people or have an awful lot of money, because that kind of helps as well? there's maybe that sort of back door. Anyway, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then I came across a top seven list that wasn't crap.
No.
Serious.
Right.
Dead serious. So there's a guy called Jimmy Nelson. Don't know if you ever heard of him. He does travel portraits.
Bloody YouTube video.
YouTube. He does travel portraits for the last 30 or 40 years.
Right.
But does you know, phenomenal work in the sort of Joey Lawrence, before Joey Lawrence was even born, sort of style.
Oh, okay.
Stuff. But he's got basically seven tips to going out there and be able to capture iconic images.
Right.
In different cultures.
Okay.
And it's good because, I mean, we're talking about someone who's been doing it for 40 years and seen obviously an awful lot of change, but he shows an image and he relates the story about how everything was going wrong. And then how this step, what this lesson one or lesson two or whatever changed how it all worked out. So it's really kind of interesting, you know.
So these seven tips were the little nuggets that he picked up over a lifetime.
Yeah, but there's stuff like to be reflective. Yeah, what is it you want out of the story? Yeah, to try and grasp the in it before you go out and try and shoot this photo of this amazing looking person. Well, think about yourself for a while. What are you trying to think? What are you thinking of? What are you trying to achieve? What's the story that you're trying to tapping into the emotion of why you want the shot?
Right.
So you can maybe get some of that out of the person rather than just have a photo of a cool-looking dude.
Right.
And if nothing else, there's a fabulous tip about how to attract reindeer.
Damn. So I've been needing that all my life.
If you want to photograph reindeer...
Yeah.
You got to watch this video. Right. It's all there. And then the last, I'm leaving it there because let's keep the surprise.
Right.
But I must also say, watch the video because the photos are worth it.
Cool.
So the photos are definitely worth it. And the last one, I came across this, what I thought was a fairly inflammatory article in Resource Mag online.com
right.
about the possible end of F-stop.
As in?
F-stop.
The F-stop as in aperture?
No, F-stop is in the camera bag people.
Oh, right.
About the possible, well, the demise, very soon to be falling in a heap, never to be seen again, demise
why?
Of F-stop.
Why?
Well, the article said, I don't know if I want to say too much of what's in the article because to me, I'm thinking you better be having some darn good bloody proof about what this guy's saying because it's fairly inflammatory. But one thing they did do is a year or so ago, they had a Kickstarter campaign for this product called Kit Sentry.
Right.
And it's basically a way of a series of bags and tagging systems where you could RFID tag your products. Say if you're going overseas with just a stack of gear, like you're a production company, you've got boxes and boxes of gear,
well,
you tag every item and the app would be able to tell you, well, which box this thing's in so you can find stuff easy.
Oh, okay, yep.
And also, oh, we've left that behind sort of stuff. So they had this thing and they successfully funded it in April 2015. Just over $27,000 in income in the Kickstarter project.
Right.
Then almost never another word heard from them.
What?
And then the last public update was April 2016, where they were saying they're having a few problems, and now they've finally come out after this article came out and said, oh, look, it's not going to happen.
And you probably
can't get your money back because we kind of spent it. And they're coming across all these reasons of why. Oh, all the GPS tracking technology was all copyrighted patented.
Right.
So we had all these legal bills, and we had all these other problems, and so first the company we hired to design and produce the hardware was unable to follow through on their initial cost estimates and production estimates.
Whoa.
And second, while developing the software, we kept running up against limitations due to existing patents. Stuff maybe you should check out first.
Yeah.
Slightly. Developed for similar tracking software, probably the same stuff. This caused significant delays, unexpected legal bills. They got sued by the sounds of it, you know. And while we may have been able to overcome one of the obstacles, the two combined have proven too much, and even the additional investment of time and money has become obvious that it's not economically viable. Therefore, we're done.
Oy, oy, oy.
While we can't bring you Kit Sentry, we'd like to offer you a goodwill credit towards any F-stop product equal to the amount you pledged.
Ooh.
So they're not going to give you that. But here's the thing. People are bleating in money. That majority of F-stop stuff's not even available. You can't even buy the stuff. There's no stock.
Really?
There's all sorts of stuff. So this guy's pretty much going on saying, yeah, this is the end of them. They're falling apart at the seams.
Wow.
Most of the people who originally started the project are gone. According to these guys, the CEO is on some mega power trip where he's taking money out of the company to go on 5-star holidays overseas, flying first class. And,
whoa.
So it's a pretty inflammatory article.
Yeah, right.
But it looks like it could be the demise of what was, from what I've been told, a pretty darn good camera bag
system. Yeah, well, I have one of their bags. Yeah. I can't remember the name of the model of the bag that I have, but it's basically a full-size backpack. I love it. It's a great bag.
Yeah.
Rod Thomas, who was a listener to this podcast, I don't know if he still is, and he's based up in Newcastle, just up
the road. Was it everything I said?
Sorry?
Was it everything I said?
Well, Rod was for a little while the Australian distributor for F-Stop bags. And this was way, way, way back in the days when I was still working at ABC News Radio. So that's over 8 years ago.
Did you work at ABC News Radio?
I did. Okay. And Rod came and met me for lunch with the head honcho from F-Stop bags.
Oh.
Yeah, and we had a chat and... Yeah, they told me all about the bags and what they were planning on doing and blah, 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 blah. And wow, it's kind of – that's why I was sort of interested in the story when you brought it up. But yeah, wow, that's unfortunate.
So have a listen to this for an article, for commentary, talking about the CEO.
Yeah.
The man is interesting. He thinks very highly of himself and talks huge numbers that are more hopes than and dreams than reality. Ooh. Everybody around him has since realized he's just an impersonator playing a real businessman and quickly distanced themselves from the ticking time bomb he is.
Wow.
The sad part is he's still out there scamming businesses to support his lifestyle. It's a real-life story of American greed. In his wake is F-Stop, left crumbling without any money to hold itself up. There are millions and millions in debt, and as long as the CEO is in charge, the company will not last and will likely be bankrupt in the next year.
Wow.
I mean, that's a pretty strong bloody statement.
That's, yeah. That was fighting words.
So, yeah, so it's interesting times for them, by the sounds of it. You know?
Yeah, wow.
So, anyway, that's all I got for the week, my friend.
Yeah, right. Well, talking about the Olympics as we were and the massive number of images that they're taking, it's probably worth mentioning Hedge for Mac.
Oh, yes.
Who are our sponsor once again for the next 4 weeks. For those who haven't heard about Hedge for Mac, it
is... We have a new listener.
Who knows? Possibly. Hedge is the fastest app for importing and backing up your media on OS X. You can back up still images, you can also back up music, and you can back up video footage. So if you've got DSLR that's video footage capable, you can back up that stuff as well. It will do multiple backups from multiple sources to multiple destinations simultaneously, which is fantastic. The simplest interface you'll find, but very powerful underneath the hood. Hedge's Fast Lane, which is the name of the product, is the fastest copy and verification engine you'll find. It's optimized for files 100 megs and larger, and it's even faster than Finder. Every file that's copied by Hedge is cross-verified with the original. There is full support for network attached storage, for RAID, and for uploading to cloud, backup services. And there are also scripts which allow you to sort, transcode, rename, and tag your media after import. If you'd like to check it out, check out hedgeformac.com/shutterzinc, where you will receive a 20% discount on your purchase. And we thank Hedge for Mac for their support of Shutterzinc. All right. The only thing I came up with this week...
You do nothing, do you?
That's right. That's me. I do nothing.
You do nothing.
I do nothing
put the damn thing together.
check out this link, Glenn. Do it while we're recording.
Dog breath photo?
Yeah.
It's coming up
this
now.
Woman has just nailed one particular niche of photography, and it is taking photos of people's dogs. And... she rocks. With all due respect to David Oakley, who also rocks, this...
he rocks differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of these are brilliant. There's very much a signature look to her work. It's all wide angle, shot very close to the dog, and she's obviously shooting with a large Octobox pretty much straight overhead. But some of the expressions and, the pause in the air, just great photos, really good photos. Down in the, it took me a little while to find it, but down in the bottom left-hand corner, there's a previous and next button.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking through it already.
So
right in that quarter of a second.
Dude. Just some beautiful images, really well done.
Nice stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I think of all the pet photography I've ever seen, this stuff's got to be right
up. This is
up.
Some of it. Yep.
Sorry?
This is some of it.
Yeah.
Of all the photography you've seen, this is definitely some of it.
This is definitely some of it.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah. So definitely check that out. Even if you don't like dogs, go and have a look because you'll probably end up liking dogs after that.
Even if you don't like dogs, think of people in these situations. Look at how they're composed. Look at how they're lit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine these as portraits as well. I love a 15mm wide angle portrait,
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
There's a great image in there, and it's quite a way through, and it really caught me by surprise because it's a white dog shot in profile with his back to a fence, but he's in a field of snow.
Yeah.
And you've actually got to look hard to see the dog, even though he's like quite large and takes like he has weight in the frame.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit of your attention to actually discern the dog from the snow. And the thing that you know, sort of immediately struck me was I wondered why she chose to shoot a white dog against a white background, you know, but it worked.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was one of those things that it made me stop and think, why would you do that? Why wouldn't, you know, if you've got a white dog, why wouldn't you go and look for a dark background so that the dog stands out? But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting choice as a photographer to make that, you know, obviously conscious decision to shoot
a shot with the Sydney Opera House. I hope she got permission.
I know, that was great. And I particularly like the fact that she's taken multiple images in order to get rid of all of the people.
Yeah.
That's
nice stuff.
Cool.
Very nice stuff.
Yeah, there's some really, really good stuff in there.
She's good at post too. Her post work is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
It's cinematic post work.
It is. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, last week we heard about Getty being on the wrong end of $1 billion yes. lawsuit for their unlawful licensing of 85,000 odd images. Was it 85,000 or 18,000?
Before you go on,
yeah,
this dog was. I've come across it. What do you mean you can't see the dog?
You couldn't see the dog.
I just found it. It's like it's a great big dog. It's got a red collar. It stands out like dogs. It's obvious. It's put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, everyone will have to click through until they find the image of the white dog in the snowfield.
120 or something. Yeah.
Anyway, Getty, yes. Last week, Getty, wrong end of this $1 billion lawsuit. After we had recorded... a story broke, and Adam posted this on the Facebook wall, that they're now on the wrong end of another lawsuit.
Nope.
Pretty bad. So there was the $1 billion lawsuit from Carol Highsmith. That was the story we covered last week. And then there's this 9-page civil complaint filed by Zuma Press, alleging copyright violations and unauthorized licensing of more than 47,000 images. So as Adam said, if you were a Getty staffer right now, you'd be seriously sending your CV out looking for a gig. 'Cause this could get ugly. So anyway. Hello?
Hello.
Where'd you go?
I'm here.
Oh.
It started raining, and all of a sudden the Wi-Fi went bad.
Oh, right. I thought you just completely zoned out or something. Well, of course, that's always a possibility.
But it was both.
Right. Yeah, so anyway.
On that high note, we should stop, because this is going to get really bad, I can tell.
Really?
There's a big rain cloud coming. Yeah, the signal's going to pieces as soon as it started raining.
Okay. All right. Well, we're pretty much done anyway.
So I'm hearing about every third word of you.
Right. Okay. All we had left to cover was David Marlin's book review for the week. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. Now, I don't want you to tell anyone. And don't tell anyone I told you this. I mean, as photographers, we've got to look cool. You know, sitting there with an SLR and a big lens, and we look as though we know what we're doing. We mustn't be seen any other way. We've got to be looking erudite. But we all have one of these tools that's very helpful in our library. It's very available, and at times it is the best read. I really shouldn't be saying this. It's the camera manual. Yes, it comes with your camera. Often it's pocket size. And if you want to be cool, of course, you don't put it in your pocket. You don't have it anywhere near you. It's still back at home, even though you're two countries away. Yes, the manual really is a useful book. People do think it's uncool to have one on them. Or, like most people, I find it very daunting because it's often not written by a photographer. It's written by some techo. And it's not necessarily well presented, and it's diagrammatic, and it's got bits and pieces uncoloured all over the place. But have a think about it. Your camera has got more grunt
than the computers that took Apollo 11 to the moon. And one thing those guys had was a manual of procedures in case things went wrong, just as an airline aircraft has these days. So we can swallow our pride a little bit, and we can actually use this. And if we use it in a constructive way, you can get more out of your photography. Now, I'll tell you a little secret. Most of them are available on PDF, so you can sneak it onto your smartphone or your tablet, so no one needs to know. So out in a shoot, you can look all erudite and smart and cool and all that stuff, and make out that you're consulting your diary or Facebook, and you could be consulting your manual. So there you go. But like other books, this is a how-to book. It's also a technical book. So how have I found it useful? Well, you first use it, I reckon, when you first get the camera and you learn to do the basic things you've always done. And then often people forget about it. So buy a new camera with new gimmicks, but don't take full advantage of it. I reckon what you do is you chuck it in the drawer for a couple of months and play around with the camera, then go back to it and make a point of going back to the manual. Then you start learning about the camera because you learn how to do things better or worse. So go back over it, have a look at features you haven't checked out yet, have a look at features that seem to be very awkward or difficult to use, and go back to the manual. If you want to go and tackle a new photo shoot, something a bit different, have a read up before you go, and that's the first book to have a look at. If you're curious about little used things in the camera, go and check out the manual. If you do this, you become very familiar with the layout of the manual. So if you need to solve things in a hurry, which usually is when you need it, you can get to it very quickly. And if at first you find it indecipherable, there are books on particular cameras by photographers. You know, in series like Snapshots to Great Shots have got those and others. So check out your camera's manual, published by your camera's manufacturer. Don't be afraid to use it. Don't be afraid to pull it out when you need to. After all, if an emergency happens at 30,000 feet, a pilot doesn't hesitate to pull out the manual to check out the order of things. So if they can do it, I think we can too. Cheers.
All right. Thank you very much. And absolutely. And believe it or not, although this will come as no surprise to our listeners, I do actually have the PDF stored on all of my devices. I have it stored on Google Drive so I can access it wherever and whenever I need to. And if Glenn was still with us, he would not be surprised. All right, mate, Glenn, I don't know if you can hear me, babe, but you have a good week and we'll talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
Another audiotier.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.